Red's Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.
Good evening, folks. Glad you could join us for the Big Red Bench on this Sunday evening. My name's Rory. We have a packed show for you coming away between now and 7 o'clock. Reaction to come from Croke Park, where Limerick have beaten Galway by 3 points to set up an all-Munster final with their rivals Waterford in 2 weeks' time. We'll hear from both camps very, very shortly indeed. We'll indeed hear from Waterford as well after their fantastic win over Kilkenny yesterday. Also on the show, reaction from Ireland's win over Georgia. Andy Farrell not best pleased with a poor enough performance today at the Aviva Stadium. Also on the show, going to talk to Denise O'Sullivan ahead of the clash with Germany on Tuesday. Going to talk to Pat Kelly about what it was like to referee Maradona. And we're going to talk to Cork City legend Declan Daly about his fundraiser for the Mersey University Hospital. You're listening to the Big Red Bench on Cork's Red FM. And we're certainly in the Christmas spirit here after Kenny Jane playing some Christmas songs just before the Big Red Bench tonight. I wanted to play an hour of Christmas songs, was told by the boss that I wasn't allowed and be sacked if I did. Was still very, very tempted to do so regardless. Does it feel like Christmas when you're watching All-Ireland Hurling Championship semi-final clashes going on in Croke Park in the middle of November, or at the end of November I should say, 29th of November, the All-Ireland semi-final. It's a weird situation watching an empty Croke Park hosting an All-Ireland semi-final over these weekends, over these 2 days of the weekends. But it will be Limerick who face Waterford in the final after today's win over Galway in 23 points it was Limerick who won this afternoon. So a fantastic result for them. 27 points to 24, I beg your pardon, was how it finished today in Croke Park. Joe Canning, though, had to be stretched off in the 61st minute. He scored 12 points there. That was a massive turning point in the game. We will talk to Valerie about that. She's in Croke Park today. We'll talk to her in just a little bit about today's game and indeed about the All-Ireland final in a couple of weeks' time. Elsewhere in ladies football, Westmeath beat Roscommon today on a score of 2-9-2, 13 points in the TG Carr All-Ireland Ladies Intermediate semi-final. They'll face Meath in the decider. That game will be on the 20th of December. In football, and Chelsea and Tottenham still scoreless, 71 minutes on the clock there in that game. Earlier on, Manchester United came from behind. Fantastic performance in the second half from them, and in particular their sub Edinson Cavani. Richard Newman.
Full time, Southampton 2, Manchester United 3. Edinson Cavani's come off the bench to save United. What an impact as a substitute. The visitors coming from 2-0 down to win this. Southampton were more clinical in the first half. Jan Bednarek opened the scoring with a header from a corner by James Ward-Prowse, who doubled the lead with a fine free kick, which eventually led to keeper David De Gea being substituted when he clattered with the post trying to save it. But Cavani's introduction made the difference for United. He set up Bruno Fernandes to score, and then the roles were reversed when the Uruguayan headed in a deflected Fernandes shot. And then in stoppage time, there was Cavani again with a stooping header past Alex McCarthy. Huge impact from him. Entertaining game. It's finished Southampton 2, Manchester United 3.
Yeah, two brilliant goals and a peach of an assist from Cavani today. And the United boss, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, says it was an important win.
It's great to get 3 points in the way we did it, as in last minute. It's a comeback. It's a tradition of this club. It's something that this team is getting better and better at as well.
Arsenal and Wolves is a 7:15 kickoff this evening. Things going from bad to worse for Celtic boss Neil Lennon. The Hoops beaten 2-0 by Ross County in the Scottish League Cup at Parkhead to knock them out. Rangers meanwhile leading Falkirk 2-0 away from home into the second half there. In rugby, as I mentioned at the top of the show, not a really that great a performance from Ireland today as they beat Georgia 23 points to 10 in their Autumn Nations Cup game at the Aviva Stadium. Billy Burns and Hugo Keenan both going over the line for Andy Farrell's side in the first half. England securing top spot in Ireland's Group A yesterday with a win over Wales. Lewis Hamilton has won the Bahrain Grand Prix, but his victory massively overshadowed by a massive crash. This was absolutely terrifying. So Romain Grosjean walking away with only minor injuries. His car was destroyed. It was a collision on the first lap when flying into a barrier at really high speed from close range. The car blew up into a ball of flame. It was one of the most terrifying things I've ever seen. Luckily, he escaped with only minor burns on his hands and his ankles. He walked away from it. It was terrifying. The race was halted for nearly an hour and a half. You should see the car afterwards. I have no idea how Grosjean walked away from that one. Shows you the advances in safety in Formula 1 over the years that meant that Grosjean could walk away. But genuine, absolutely terrifying stuff at that Grand Prix today. So glad Romain Grosjean could walk away. All right, we have a competition on the show tonight. We have a €25 voucher to give away with thanks to our friends at Supermax this evening. Very simple. We just want you to text your name and your address to 086-8104-106. And we want you to answer this very, very simple question. Who will contest this year's All-Ireland Hurling Final? Who will contest this year's All-Ireland Hurling Final? You could be winning a €25 voucher with thanks to our friends at Supermax. Visit supermax.ie. 086-8104-106 on text or WhatsApp. Who will contest this year's All-Ireland Hurling Final? We will announce the winner at the end of the show. Right, we are going to start today's show, though, with our rugby. We'll go to Croke Park in a bit. Going to talk to Valerie very, very soon. We're going to get the reaction from Andy Farrell following today's disappointing performance against Georgia.
Not good enough, Murray. Not good enough. Certainly in that second 40, it wasn't the standard that we expected of ourselves and wasn't the standard that especially playing at home after the first 40 that I thought was decent enough, flowing at times, still obviously things to fix at half time, but you know, the two tries, one from a forward pass, and I don't know the rules anymore regarding that. You know, we have a touch judge that's telling us that it's a try, and then a referee that says it's not a try. James Ryan's over the line just before half time. He's got the ball down, so he says. So still things to fix, but I thought our game was flowing a little bit in the first half, and then come out in the second half, and I just thought we didn't have any courage of our own conviction, like, you know. I thought that Georgia thoroughly deserved to earn the right to slow our game down by being total menaces at the breakdown, and all credit to them for that, but that's not good enough from us.
What could you specifically have done better, you guys, in the second half?
Well, the bigger picture stuff, again, if you have the courage of your own convictions, then you'll follow through with whatever it may be. If you're trying to get the ball to the wide channels, then let's do it properly, like, you know. Let's make sure that there's proper intent in our player to get it there. And there certainly was opportunities for us to get into space out wide, and we just tucked, and we probably turned ourselves back inside on a number of occasions, and got turned over at the breakdown. They hunted us hard down at the breakdown, and then on the other side of that, when we punched onto a ball, we punched onto a ball a couple of times towards the end of the game, really hard and tough, and then our breakdown work was able to follow. But sometimes I didn't think we had conviction with our carry as well, and therefore they was able to slow our ball down.
Andy, that's kind of becoming a common theme after the France match. You were talking about belief, and now it's courage and conviction. What are you putting that down to? What's the solution to that?
Well, there's obviously something to do with the third quarter. You know, as I said, after at half time, we was quite bullish at half time regarding we was creating our own luck. You know, we had some great energy in our kick chase. I thought, barring one defensive slip there, obviously for the try, I thought we'd a couple of really good two man hits that was dominant, etc. I thought our line out pressure, our line out in general was good, and then our line out pressure defensively was creating a bit of havoc for them, and then in the second half we needed to just stick to the plan and keep putting the pressure on Georgia by keep turning them around, etc. But we decided to play a line out and go wide, and it was on to go wide, and we didn't commit ourselves properly to it, you know. So again, all these things add up to giving the opposition energy, don't they, and belief in themselves.
Thanks, Andy. Could you just give us a run through the injuries, what happened to Billy and Andrew, or who else was reported with an injury?
I don't know where to start, really. There's quite a few. Rob Herring's got a little bit of something that needs to be having a look at regarding his rib. Billy, he went... He felt something in his groin in the warm-up. He said he was fine to play and played a nice first 40 start, I thought, but he's nursing a groin injury. Connor got a bang within the first couple of minutes of a dead leg, so we had to look after him. He seems that he's going to be fine. Obviously, Will came off a HIA, so it's a six-day turnaround. We'll see how that goes. Keith Earls had a back spasm, had to come off as well. So, quite a bit of disruption, but that's nothing to do with the second half performance.
Andy, how much of a missed opportunity did this feel? And in terms of the overall picture, are you concerned?
Missed opportunity, yeah, a tale of two halves. So we need to be honest with ourselves this week, and we've a 6-day turnaround, so there's not going to be that much time on the field to fix a few things, but we've got to make sure that we be honest with each other and make sure that there's a better 80-minute performance next weekend.
Andy, just on that, how much of a threat do you think Scotland are coming over here for that playoff game?
I think they're a big threat. I think they're playing well. They're playing a nice brand of rugby. The last time we played them here in the Aviva in the Six Nations, it was a difficult match. I thought they played really well that night, so I'm sure that after watching that second half performance there and taking stock of what happened in the Six Nations, I'm sure that they'll see that as an opportunity that they like to try and take back. So we'll see what we're about this week.
Guys, we've got time for one more.
Yeah, that's Andy Farrell there in the post-match press conference following today's win over Georgia. Not the greatest performances from Ireland today, it has to be said, and playoff against Scotland now next Saturday to come after today's game. 23-10 was how it finished at the Aviva Stadium. In the Premier League, still one game ongoing. Chelsea and Tottenham are going head to head. Not a great game by any stretch of the imagination. Scoreless there after 81 minutes. And Arsenal and Wolves is the later kickoff this evening at 7:15. We're going to get some reaction from Croke Park in a bit following Limerick's win over Galway today. They'll face Waterford, who turned in one of the great second half performances yesterday in Croke Park as they became Kilkenny 227-223. It was thrilling stuff. It was absolutely fantastic. It was such a wonderful game of hurling, and Waterford deserved winners yesterday. Fantastic performance from them, and we'll hear from their boss now, Liam Cahill, following yesterday's win.
Congratulations. There's halftime talks in sport have become the thing of legends over the years. Can you give us a little bit of an insight into how a 7-point deficit was turned around so much by the water break in the second half?
Yeah, well, sure, look, it wasn't down to anything dramatic, I can assure you that. It was down to the players, really. Just our decision-making was costing us big time in the first half. Left, you know, quite a number of easy plays or chances maybe behind us. I know Kilkenny missed quite a number as well, but we just seemed to be off it a little bit. But I thought it was more mentally with our mindset than we were than our legs more so. So we just tried to address that and see could we turn it around. And you know, we looked for a green flag or two. We needed that to give ourselves a chance of getting back into the game, and thankfully we got that, and look, sure, it is great. We're pure thrilled and delighted to be in a final.
Could nervousness be a part of that in the first half, the occasion and so much that's been spoken about this squad and what you've done so far this year?
I don't think so. I think it's just some days fellas are feeling it and more days they're not, and but a real good sign today was that fellas didn't give up on it, and that's the most encouraging part for me, that they kept backing themselves and they kept, you know, willing and wanting to turn it around. And, you know, that's what you know, decent teams are made of. And thankfully, as I said, it worked out. And very proud of the players today.
You must be massively impressed as well with the nature of how they pushed on in the second half. Didn't just simply get yourselves back into the game, but just completely grabbed the game by the scruff of the neck and did everything that was within your power to determine the end result.
Yeah, absolutely. All that is good. You know, that's what will be required. You know, every day you go out and you're playing opposition like Kilkenny or any of the top teams in the country, you have to have that ruthlessness to see out matches. And, you know, the fellas worked really hard today to see out the match. And, you know, credit to Austin Gleeson. He was out his legs there and he absolutely, you know, gave everything he had. And I think, you know, if ever a performance epitomised Austin Gleeson, I think on my watch today, I think today was that, because in fairness to the man, he's been lauded and applauded for all the spectacular things he does. And I think from today and over my reign so far, I think he's brought a different aspect to his game, from work rate and honesty and hooking and blocking and being a part of a team. And I'm delighted for him in particular.
Just a last one from me. You've been the story of the hurling championship for a lot of people. Managing expectation might become as big a challenge over the next 2 weeks as anything else. With all that's been done this year, you now have the opportunity to, Waterford have the opportunity to take the ultimate step. Does what's gone so far count for anything if you don't leave here with a significant piece of silverware in a couple of weeks?
Sure, look, I suppose it's a results driven business, isn't it, when you're managing an inter-county team and you're managing a county like Waterford that have good hurlers and expect to be in the last four and the last two of championships. So look, yes, there's silverware there to be won. We're going to do everything in our power to try and win it now at this stage, but we have to be very conscious that we will come here to hurl a match in 2 weeks' time, and we'll try our utmost not to play the occasion, and that'll be our goal for the next fortnight. But I think these fellas are enjoying their hurling, they're enjoying what we're creating inside it in training, and I think they'll look forward to 2 weeks' time.
Liam, can I ask you just about, you sort of playing to the occasion and that kind of thing, and we've been tying ourselves up in knots wondering, the presence of a crowd here or there doesn't make any difference at all. Now, you as a manager, you're used to being that person coming in as the underdog and winning things and winning matches when people don't expect it. But the crowd, is it a factor? Who better to answer this than you?
Yeah, well, I can assure you, I suppose I was happy enough at half time today that there was no crowd there because I'm sure I got plenty of advice going down the tunnel. But it is strange, but I think it's not taken from the intensity on the field. You can see that yourselves. I don't know, do the people at home really probably don't get a proper grasp of it when they're watching it on the television? But when you're there on the line and you see the hits that are going in and the ferocity that's there, it's incredible. So from a player perspective, I'd say it doesn't change on the field, but definitely we'd love to have the crowds. But sure, look, at the end of the day, we're pure thrilled to have games at all at this stage.
You had more miles on the clock coming into this game than Kilkenny, not that it bothered you, but coming up to the end of it, people were worried. I'd say everyone at home was screaming for it, in particular for Waterford to hold on. I was worried for you as well. What was the difference in the end? Was it physical fitness or was it just mind over matter? Didn't matter the pain, just get through it.
Yeah, it's a combination of all of them things, to be fair. And I think we did quite well to freshen it up. We probably could have freshened it a little bit earlier, but we seemed to be going reasonably well, and you're always afraid to tweak it too much when the momentum is with you. But I thought young Earl Daly gave us great emphasis today when he came on for a young fella of 19, 20 years of age. I think, you know, any of the subs that came on, Darragh Lyons in particular, you know. So we have good players in Waterford that are, you know, putting up their hand every week to come in, and it's great. It's great for me as a manager that you can have that energy to come in and help the fellas that have been maybe flat out for the last 3 weeks. So delighted.
Yeah, it's Liam Cahill there speaking after Waterford's win over Kilkenny yesterday. I'm going to hear from a very dejected Brian Cody after yesterday's defeat.
These interviews are never easy. I think the last time I spoke to you actually was after the All-Ireland final, and I think a trait we were just discussing before you came down that is admirable. You win, lose or draw, you do come out and you face the barrage, and there's a lot of us here this evening.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, that's sport. I mean, one team wins, one team doesn't win, and the team that wins always feel terrific about it. And, you know, we've done okay in the past in that. The team, when you don't win then, I mean, what can you do? You say well done to the opposition that beat you. You go away, you feel like, you feel fairly awful. But at the same time, it's sport, and you've got to be able to take these defeats on the chin and move on.
It was Jurgen Klopp, I think, who said that sport was the most important thing of the least important things. But does a loss like this, it's still an All-Ireland semi-final, albeit, like you said, in a very tough year, it's still going to hurt?
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, is you know, what's happening around the country and around the world is on a different level completely to everything else. And we played, and the GAA worked within the rules of what could happen and within the realms of what could happen. And that was very, very important. But when it comes to match day, like everything else goes out the window, and match takes over everything. And, you know, we were going home disappointed. And that's the way losers always go home. And Walford are going home very, very happy. It's something terrific to look forward to, and we wish them well.
And if there's to be one benefit of this year, finally, it's that next year isn't that far away.
Yeah, that's the game, and sport is like that too. Life is like that, you know, life moves on, and teams who don't win go away very, very disappointed, but players play while they can, and that's it.
Yeah, massively disappointed there, Brian Cody, quite philosophical at the same time following yesterday's defeat to Waterford. Waterford will, of course, face Limerick in the final after their win over Galway. We'll go back to Croke Park in just a little bit. And now it's a big week for the Republic of Ireland women's team as they face Germany in their European Championship qualifier. It's a massive task for Ireland as they have to better or match or better Ukraine's result against Montenegro on Tuesday night to progress to the Euros. So it's a big ask. Germany are in fantastic form. They are the team to beat. Ireland have a big task ahead of them in Tala this coming Tuesday night. But Denise O'Sullivan, the Cork woman, will be starting for the Republic of Ireland in the engine room this coming Tuesday night. And she gave her thoughts before the game.
We have to be realistic. Germany are one of the best teams in the world, and we've seen that against them there last month or the month before, that how good they were and how tough the game was. But we'll have a game plan, and we'll work hard this week, and, you know, just go out and do our best really, and try and get 3 points. Yeah, it's been tough. It's been so different, but you know, we're just trying to be very careful. Obviously, at club, we just have to follow all the guidelines. Just the usual stuff of wearing masks, you know, not being too close together. But obviously that's hard when you're training together every single day. But it's the same in camp here. Just being really, really careful and wearing your mask everywhere you go. You know, there's only one, two, a dinner table, one person. And really, that's it. But I think we've taken it very well, and hopefully it'll go well in this camp as well. It is a long camp. It's a 9-day camp. But do you know what? We're just excited for the game, really. And, you know, we'd want it to come around really quick, but we'll keep ourselves occupied, and we have Netflix here and stuff. So we'll just watch Netflix and train hard every day and just look forward to it.
Netflix and chill.
That's it. That's it. Thanks, Tony. Yeah, honestly, it was. It was absolutely devastating. And I didn't get over it for, like, honestly, a few weeks later. I went back to Brighton and I was just so down. But look, it's football, and, you know, those nights happen. Those nights happen a lot. And, you know, we just had to pick ourselves back up again. And, you know, coming into this camp, we'd be very positive. We're still second in the table. So, you know, that's a positive, and we'll prepare as well as we can. And, you know, hopefully go out and do a good job. Yeah, there was. I was very down, to be fair. And, yeah, there was tears afterwards too. And just really down. It was probably the most upsetting part of my career, losing that game, to be quite honest. And but look, those things make you stronger, and as I said, you just have to take the positives out of it. And we weren't bad on the night, you know, it just didn't go our way. So here we are in camp now for this, you know, huge game, and we're just excited to get out there and play. After a few weeks, you just have to, really, because look, you've another big game coming up, and you know, you can't think about the past anymore. And I'm past it now, and move forward. I think we all have, so we're just focusing on the next game.
Kiva mentioned miracle there. Do you believe in miracles?
I do, yeah, anything can happen. It's 11v11, and being realistic, Germany are they're out of this world. Like, we've seen it against them the last time, that they're such a good team, and it was a really tough game. But as I said, anything can happen, and you know, we'll have a game plan, and we'll go out and do the best we can. So look forward to it. I've been enjoying it, yeah. It's different, but it's a new challenge, and I love a challenge for myself. So I am enjoying that part, and I have the two Irish girls there as well, so that has helped me a lot to settle in and stuff. And you know, the team welcomed me with open arms. The club, they've been absolutely fantastic. And the league is a huge challenge. It's very competitive. You can see that with all the different players that came from all over the world. And yeah, but I'm really enjoying it.
And I suppose you mentioned the two Irish girls there. Just how big of a boost was that coming into Brighton, just knowing you had a piece of home with you?
Yeah, it made my decision easier, to be quite honest, to go to Brighton. Having those two there, Megan has been my friend since 14, 15 years old, played together, played against each other. Same with Rihanna. We've known each other a very long time, and I really settled in right away, to be quite honest, because living with them, they're so familiar. Rihanna cooks me dinner every single night, so absolutely buzzing with that. So it's going very well. Love the Courage. Very excited to go back there. They're a world-class team, to be quite honest, and the training environment is top class. You're only going to get a lot better from being there. I have one of the best coaches too, Paul Riley, and I've learned a lot from him, and I've grown as a player, so I'm really excited. It's going to be a very long season next year. Obviously, with the pandemic and stuff this year, we didn't get to do much. It was a tournament, so that was kind of sad. But into next year, we have the tournament and we have the regular season as well. So we've a lot to look forward to. Whatever team they put out, then, you know, well enough. We'll have a game plan and we'll focus on ourselves. And regardless of who they put out, we'll go out and do our very best. So I'm not really sure who they're going to put out, to be quite honest, but I'm excited anyway.
Do you have any hope, or did you see anything in Montenegro that they'd have any hope of getting a result in Kiev?
I mean, as I said, same with us, it's 11v11, and, you know, they could take the points. I'm not really sure, but it would be fantastic if they did. But Ukraine are a good side, and I don't know, we'll just wait and see, I guess.
Yes, Denise O'Sullivan there, speaking ahead of Tuesday's game at Tallaght Stadium. The Republic of Ireland taking on Germany. Ireland needing to match or better Ukraine's result against Montenegro. Of course, you heard Denise talk about the disappointment there of losing out to Ukraine last time. Thanks to that own goal, very disappointing for the boys in green, or the girls in green, excuse me, when their destiny was in their own hands. But look, they faced Germany on Tuesday, nothing to lose, so they might as well go for it. And as Denise said there, stranger things have happened. So fingers crossed for a little Christmas miracle on Tuesday night. Go and take a quick break. When we come back, we're talking to Cork City legend Declan Daly, and we're going to talk to the man who refereed Diego Maradona back in 1990, Mr. Pat Kelly.
The Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.
Glad you could join us on the Big Red Bench on this Sunday evening. Our competition on the show tonight, we have a €25 voucher to give away with thanks to our good friends at Supermax. Visit supermax.ie to enter. Very simple, just text your name 086 8104 106, or you can send it on WhatsApp as well. Answer this very simple question: who will contest this year's All-Ireland Hurling Final? Who will contest this year's All-Ireland Hurling Final? 086 8104 106 on text or WhatsApp. We'll announce the winner at the end of the show. Finish scoreless between Chelsea and Tottenham. Joe Rawson.
Full time, Chelsea 0, Tottenham 0. It's been a feisty encounter between the two London rivals, who both missed good chances to score. Spurs were the better team in the first half, with Steven Bergwijn's balloon shot over the bar from inside the box their best opportunity. Chelsea dominated the second 45, but Tammy Abraham, Hakim Ziyech and Olivier Giroud all missed chances from good positions inside the penalty area. The point is enough to take Jose Mourinho's team back to the top of the Premier League table. Spoils shared, Chelsea 0, Tottenham 0.
Delayed kickoff, Arsenal and Wolves, 8:15. Andrew Cheel has team news.
Two changes for Arsenal. David Luiz in for Holding at centre-back. Holding drops to the bench, and Saka replaces the suspended Pepe in midfield. Wolves make three changes. Kilman, Nouri and Neves are replaced by Marcel, Cody and Neto. It's Arsenal against Wolves at the Emirates Stadium.
All right, Cork City legend Declan Daly has launched a fundraising initiative for the Mercy University Hospital. It's a 5K virtual run or walk, with all the proceeds going to the Mercy. Now, it's in honour of Declan's mother, Lena, who sadly passed away back in September. I've been speaking to Jack about the initiative. Okay, joined on the line by our good friend Declan Daly, who has launched a fundraising initiative for the Mercy University Hospital. Declan, first off, thanks for joining us on the Big Red Bench.
Hi Rory, good to talk to you in strange times.
Yeah, it's a bit weird, isn't it? How have you found lockdown, or how have you found everything?
Lockdown has been strange, as it's been for everybody else. I think it's amazing what you get used to when you're doing it for a long period of time, but I still can't wait for a bit of normality to come back into the whole thing.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Declan, our condolences anyway in the passing of your mother, Lena Daly, an incredible woman, and we're very sorry to hear that.
Thanks very much, Rory. Thanks for that. Yeah, it was just around September this year. It was a big blow, to be honest.
Yeah, and I can imagine so. And you're fundraising now in her memory, in her name, and a fantastic initiative coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, Rory, I think, look, what it was really is that my mum went into hospital in the middle of August and ultimately passed away in St. Mary's Ward in the Mercy Hospital on the 7th of September. But during the 3.5 weeks that she was in there, she got tremendous care and from the staff of the Mercy, from everybody involved, really, the catering, the cleaning, the nursing, the medical teams. They were all really, really good to her, and she was a real humane experience towards the end of her life. So we just wanted to see if there was some way we could acknowledge that. And given the fundraising restrictions that are there for a lot of the charities at the moment with COVID and regular events that will be going on, outdoor events that will be going on for them, we felt that we might try and do something to, in some small way, to show our appreciation. So this is what we're trying to do in the first 2 weeks of December.
And the work, I suppose, Declan, that frontline staff are doing in very, very trying conditions, as you mentioned, with COVID-19, is nothing short of incredible.
Yeah, I think that it really is a difficult place for them. Like, and I saw it probably firsthand over those 2 or 3 weeks that we were there. They are really the first point of contact for people when they're sick at that stage, because a lot of time family are restricted from visiting and everything else. So they are a bit more, even the nurses or carers or their friends and their contact points, human contact points for the people that are in hospital. So we probably saw that at first hand over those couple of weeks. And it's only a small gesture. It won't be a huge thing for the Mercy, but I think for us it's just talking to say, look, we appreciate all they did, and for my mother, and that's what we're trying to do in December.
Yeah, and it's a 5K virtual walk, a run for the Mercy, so everyone can do it, basically.
Yeah, I suppose I wanted to get something that I could do and that everybody else could do. So we said maybe 2 weeks to do 5K would be something that I could achieve. So I think that that's what it is. It's a fun event. It's an event that's there whose sole purpose is to raise funds and to try and see if we can match it with hopefully what will be a reduced lockdown and people can get out a little bit. And for all those things, we just said maybe the first 2 weeks of December, we do a 5K. You could do a 5K any way you want. Walk, push a pram, jog, do it over 4 or 5 days, whichever suits, just to get the event moving.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, Declan, fundraising, I suppose, is down across the board, and any small bit of help that you can give to the Mercy Foundation for this would be greatly appreciated.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. I think for us as a family, my sisters, Geraldine, Paul, and brother Ken, like, we just wanted to see if there was any way at all we could show our public appreciation for it, and I think this was something that we thought might work, and if we can raise funds for it. And I think we have raised, like, there's funds have been raised already, because it was launched probably recently with the Mercy Hospital, and people in advance of the first 2 weeks of December have been making donations. So to those people, I want to say thanks very much, because it's all very much appreciated, and hopefully we'll like to see a number of people joining us for the 2 weeks and doing the event then.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the justgiving.com page here. There's over €1,000 raised, and considering that the event hasn't even started yet, that must be particularly pleasing.
Yeah, it's super for us, I suppose, as a family. We didn't really have any idea or what kind of funds would be raised. I think the important thing for us was to try and show our appreciation to the staff there in memory of our mother. So, and it's in a strange way, Rory, I suppose, like, my father actually died in the Mercy 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. In the same war that my mother died in September. So there was something I wanted to do 6 years ago, and it's been a regret of mine that we didn't do it at that stage, because they were equally as good with my father that time as they were with my mother. So it's just something we didn't want to leave past this year. We wanted to get it done before the end of the year, really.
Exactly, yeah. So it's 5K walk or run. Can be done any in the first 2 weeks of December. If people want to donate, to justgiving.com page is the best place.
I think just Google Run for Lena, and that'll bring you straight to the page. And I think anything at all, I know people have been very generous with donations over this period of time, and if there is an opportunity for people to continue and do it to this charity, we would really appreciate it. And if not, just do the walk and join us on it. And maybe if we can post, get pictures if you're doing it. It would be appreciated to get a picture and just to tag the Mercy Hospital Foundation, and it would get a bit of a buzz going for the event for maybe for the 2 weeks.
Yes, certainly. So, Dec, just a quick word while I have you on Cork City. Disappointing season, yes. I guess, for them being relegated, and life will be tough in the first division, but hopefully they can come out of it at the first chance.
Yeah, it's really difficult, I suppose, when you consider the change from 2017 to where we are now. Yeah. It was a big change, it was a very difficult season for everybody. I think it didn't help that the season was curtailed games-wise, so you really had no opportunity to make up any lost ground. I think if you were behind and you were chasing, it's a really, really difficult league to pick up points. And when you had the number of games reduced just to two rounds of matches, it was always going to be an uphill battle for us to stay up. Yeah. I think my hope towards the end of the season when we get into the playoff position, I didn't think we were going to stay up outright, but I thought if we could get to the playoff position, I thought we might win that once-off game, which would have kept us there. So, but it wasn't to be, and I think it's unfortunate we're down there, but I think it's a difficult league. There's going to be we live a local derby in Cork, there's going to be Galway, there's going to be Shelburne, it's going to be a really competitive division to get out of, but I think that's the sole focus, I would imagine, of the club to get out of it at this stage.
Alright, Dec, thanks a million for joining us. Very best luck with the fundraising over the next couple of weeks. I'm going to do it myself as well, so you'll see me puffing a pant in around Watergrass Hill.
I look forward to seeing the photograph and the fast time, Rory.
I don't know about the fast time, Dec, but it'll be a time anyway. But Declan, thanks very much for joining us today, buddy.
Thanks, Rory. Thanks, bye.
Yeah, it was a pleasure talking to our pal Declan Daly there, the Cork City legend, former Cork City captain, and a fantastic initiative as well for the Mercy University Hospital. So if you want more details on that, if you'd like to donate, you can go on to justgiving.ie and search for 5k for Lena. I'll take it to it. I'm looking forward to doing that at some stage this week. Won't be a fast time, but it will be a time. All right, the football world is in mourning following the death of the legendary Diego Maradona earlier on in the week. Now, one Cork man who got closer to him the most is referee Pat Kelly. Pat refereed a friendly between Argentina and Switzerland in May of 1990 as the then reigning champions prepared for their World Cup defence the following month. I spoke to Pat about refereeing the best player in the world. Okay, we're all mourning the death of Diego Maradona this week, but one man who got closer to him the most was our good friend Pat Kelly, who joins us on the line now. Pat, how are you, sir?
I'm very good, Rory, and you?
I'm good now. Thanks a million for taking the call. I was amazed during the week. You phoned me to chat about something else completely. It was the day that Maradona died, and I just kind of said to you offhand, did you ever referee him? Not thinking you were going to say, no, I didn't. But then you were like, oh, yeah, I did. 1990. That's amazing, Pat. Can you tell us how it came about?
Yeah, the FAI did an exchange with Switzerland. We had an exchange going for years, an exchange of referee for friendly matches. Hmm. And in 1990, when they were world champions, we got the call to know would we staff the Switzerland-Argentina match in Bern.
Yeah.
And it was the week of the FAI Cup final. Now, Kevin O'Sullivan was refereeing his last match in 1990, the FAI Cup final between Bray Wanderers and St. Francis. And Kevin was one of my assistants in Bern. You know, it was a good release for him because build up to a cup final, you're better off being out of the country and not to have people annoying you. And Kevin was with me, you know, it was great to have somebody else from Cork as well with me. And the other assistant was Robert Finn from Waterford.
Yeah, fantastic.
So, yeah, that's the way it came about. And I was appointed to the friendly match, and we went out and did our thing, and that was it, really.
Like, they were the world champions playing Switzerland, like going into the World Cup. They were about a month away from the World Cup at that point. I mean, like, they were the biggest team in the world. Would this have been the biggest game in your career up to this point, or one of the biggest games in your career up to this point?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. You know, it always stands out because of who was playing in it, you know. Mm. The fact that Maradona was playing was the real big thing for us, like. But it was still a match that you had to go referee, you know. These matches at times, friendly matches with big name players, they were more trouble than they were worth in the long run, like, because you had to keep control of them, And if you sent anybody off, the first thing people would say is, oh, he was only looking for notice and he wanted to do this. That was it, you know. Yeah. I've had fellas taken off, like Roy Keane and Brian Flood above in Dublin when Shelburne played Rovers and with a full house, where Brian Flood was having a go off Roy and he was picking the wrong man, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So I had to get both managers to take the two of them off, otherwise I'd have had to send them off and then I'd have to report it.
Yeah. Fantastic. What was Maradona like? I mean, did you meet him beforehand, before the game kicked off, or it was the first time you met him was in the center circle?
No, they were warming up the same as we were, and there was no contact made really until they came to the center circle. And we shook hands with the board assistants as well. Trying to get him out of the dressing room was the biggest problem.
Yeah.
And somebody sent me the match the other night, and the build-up to it, it must have been 2.25 hours long, I'd say. The build-up was looking at the supporters and all that before the match and trying to get Argentina out of the dressing room before the match, whatever they were at inside there.
They were taking their time.
Definitely, yeah.
And Maradona was like the biggest star in the world at this point as well, wasn't he?
Without a doubt, yeah. And to me, I mean, they speak about Ronaldo and Messi and George Best and Pelé. I didn't get the opportunity to see Pelé live. I've seen the others live, but he was my, you know, he was the real biggest one as far as I'm concerned, and the best player in my opinion.
And he was quite short as well. Were you surprised by how small he was in the flesh?
Yeah, when I have to look down on someone, Rory, that's it. I normally had to look up to people.
Yeah,
but when you had to look down on them.
When you're refereeing games like this as well, can you appreciate like the class and quality of players like this, or are you just fully focused on the game?
Yeah, well, you're fully focused on the game, really. But you know, Neil was on the other day, and he was on about, you know, the biggest match I ever did. And all right, I did my two cup finals. Your grandfather, I know, did plenty of cup finals in his time. Rory, Owen McCarthy, yeah. And Owen got me into refereeing first day.
So it's my granddad's fault, so basically, is it?
That's his fault, yeah. I have him to thank for anything that I've achieved down through the years.
Yeah.
I can guarantee a gentleman. But I refereed the under-16 UEFA final in 1993 in Istanbul.
Yeah.
And it's only when I went through the programme a couple of years ago now, really, because I'm working on a book for the last 5 years, which will be done for Marymount and the Mercy Hospital. And I was looking at it and I saw goalkeeper Buffon. And the centre forward was Totti.
Yeah.
And no, at that age, you don't realise. All you're interested in is refereeing the match. You could see the bit of skill coming out in people, all right, but I wouldn't have been a coach or anything else, a player's coach, to say that this fella's going to make a great player or that fella's going to make a great player. But when you look back after and see, Jesus, they were playing in that match and I didn't even realise it, you know.
Yeah. And this game
is amazing.
Yeah, this game itself, Argentina and Switzerland finished 1-1 in Bern. There's about 10,000 people there at it. I watched the game on YouTube, and there's kind of almost a buzz whenever Maradona gets the ball, even from the Swiss fans.
That's right.
They're just so excited to see him.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of Argentinian supporters there, but Switzerland at that time, even in 1990, it wasn't a real football country as such. Like, I mean, if Argentina were playing in any other country in the world, it would have been full house, and that was it, you know. But the stadium wasn't full by any means.
Yeah.
So.
And did
I suppose they were more interested in the financial side of things in Switzerland. It's the home of finances, you know. Yeah. So maybe football is only secondary, you know.
When you look back in the game, Pat, did Maradona do anything in particular that stood out to you, or was he just kind of generally class for the whole 90 minutes, or was he, did he have a quiet game?
he was class. Like, you could see, you know, he just was class. But he didn't cause me any problems as such.
Yeah.
He was whinging once or twice, all right, no decisions that would go against him, but which is a norm anyway, you know. So, other than that, like, everything was grand.
Yeah, a player like Maradona, the opposition kind of tends to, I suppose, kind of kick lumps out of him to let them know they're there. Were the Swiss like that on the day? Or
no, they weren't. They weren't really. They didn't cause any problems. I can't even remember if there was a caution in the match. But these people at times show respect for players as well. You can't, you know, you have to have respect for class. And you have to realise, but that's not to say that they'll give them a free ride either.
Yeah.
But I was saying as well, like, that I got the match ball after. And when I brought it home, I would never and have never asked anybody for an autograph.
Yeah.
But I got somebody to get the autograph.
Yeah.
And I gave it to the school. I gave the ball to the school here with a photograph of myself and Maradona coming off at the final whistle. And he had his hands apart. He was speaking in Spanish, obviously, so all new to me. So that went up to the school just to raise funds for Beaumont School above, and I don't know who won the thing, like, but I can guarantee it's not. I didn't get the autograph for him.
That's some memento someone has now at home.
Yeah.
So after the game, then did you get a chance to speak to him or any of the players, or is it just kind of straight home?
No. They just go. We went back to our hotel. They went back to their hotel, wherever they were staying, and we flew home the following day. And that week was all about the cup final, really. The cup final is the biggest game you can referee.
It's an honour for a referee, isn't it?
And yeah, and that's it was Kevin's week, and there was no point in, you know, trying to steal the thunder or anything else. It was that week, and this was a friendly match that took place, and Kevin was sent out with me. Maybe he was sent out just to relax for a few days. But it was great. We all got on grand and all returned safely, and nobody knew much about it, really, until poor Maradona died the other day.
This is very sad. How did Kevin get on in the FAI Cup final? Was it Bray Wanderers and St. Francis?
It was great. That was the day John Ryan equaled Moya Dennehy's hat-trick. They were the only two that ever scored a hat-trick in the cup final. Moya in 72 and John Ryan then in 1990. But that was the famous St. Francis match, Brian St. Francis.
And tell me then, a few years later, it was almost like history repeating itself when your son Alan, who of course is a very famous referee himself, refereed Argentina and Spain when Diego Maradona was coach.
Yeah, that was another exchange. I was working in the FAI that time, managing the referees, and I did an exchange with my Spanish counterpart, and they couldn't. It was the first match in the Aviva Stadium when Ireland played Argentina. Yeah. Alan refereed Manchester United and the League of Ireland. That was the opening match. But the first international match was Argentina and Ireland and Argentina, and I asked the English, David Ellery, to know, could we do an exchange? And he said, look, we'd love to do that match, but we can only give you being international in return.
Yeah.
So I said, that's not good enough for me. I said, he was telling me really like that we weren't capable of refereeing England. So I passed on that and got on to my counterpart in Spain, and he agreed. Even though they couldn't supply a referee for the Argentina match because their FIFA referees were already appointed to friendly matches.
Yeah.
But they gave us Spain and Argentina, and we gave them another match after Ireland, and I think it was Denmark we gave them. But that was how it came about, and Maradona was the manager that time.
Yeah, and was he quiet on the day? I can't remember the match now, but I can't.
Alan said he was a bit mouthy, all right, but lucky enough, Alan didn't have much Spanish either, so he didn't know what he was saying.
Fantastic stuff there from Pat Kelly, fantastic storyteller, and what a story to have as well. Being on the pitch with Diego Maradona just before their defence of the World Cup kicked off in 1990. Absolutely incredible stuff, and great to hear from Pat. And Pat has a book in the workings as well. It's on the way, and we'll have Pat on to talk about his career in a bit more depth when that book comes out. And as Pat said, a lot of the proceeds going to charity as well. So fantastic stuff there indeed. Back to Croke Park we go. Valerie Wheeler joins us from a very cold Dublin, I'd imagine it is. But Valerie, it is Limerick who are into the All-Ireland Hurling Championship final, where they will face Waterford in just under 2 weeks' time. In fact, 2 weeks' time today, I should say. And I have to say, Limerick deserved it today.
Yeah, they Rory, you're dead right about it being a cold and foggy and dark Croke Park. We're being kicked out. I was trying to walk to the car while carry a few bags while I talk to you. But look, they were deserving winners in the end. I think that even though that Limerick knew themselves, they got off to a rocky start. I counted 10 or 11 wides throughout the game. You know, they do know that they have a lot of stuff to work on. But once the 10th minute came and the first score came on the scoreboard, you know, they seem to have just found themselves. Plenty of players on the field that stood out. I mean, Tom Morris, who's excellent. Grote, Hegarty, Dermot Burns, plenty of them really stood up today, which is important. I think I was seeing stats online of how much they shut down Galway's puckouts, and I think they got so much scores from Galway's puckouts, even their own puckouts today. So they were just a pleasure to watch, and I think poor old Galway, I think that, you know, I don't know, were they able to get up to speed to Limerick? Then also that their injury rolls, I think losing Colin Mannion so early in the game really didn't help them. And then, of course, Joe Canning towards the end. You know, he's such a big loss. Those four sideline cuts, I mean, amazing, one of them he took in front of me, Rory, and I will never forget it. He is just outstanding as a hurler. And, you know, it's such a pity for him because he just always falls short on the big days as part of a team. And that's really tough to take.
Yeah, Canning's injury was kind of a weird one because it seemed to almost galvanise Galway when he went off injured, and they kind of doubled their efforts and got right back into the game.
Yeah, they did, and maybe that was part of, you know, maybe that's the reason why they kind of took a couple of seconds to, they were probably like, okay, we're after losing Joe, here we go, we really need to put it up to him. But then they just fell away again, and, you know, hopefully players would have been like, right, let's do this for us, let's do this for Joe, let's do it for Cahill, let's do it for Shane O'Neill, you know. And Shane O'Neill was very cross afterwards. I just felt like he, you know, he's obviously frustrated and upset by maybe how they played this evening. But Joe, I had no official update when I was chatting to Shane O'Neill just a while ago, but he said he was in the medical room and it was probably concussion, that he was doing all right. But no one likes to see players like Joe Canning or any player being injured in a game like that. You know, I think it's a scary moment. He was down for a good while, and I'd say he genuinely went out for the couch, Rory, because I didn't see his legs move for a couple of minutes or a couple of seconds, even not even minutes.
Yeah.
But you know, it's I think it's really scary when players take a knock like that, because you're just so worried of the outcome of it.
Yeah, it wasn't a pleasant viewing, I have to say, at all. But it will be Limerick now to face Waterford in the final. And Valerie, on paper, that could be an absolute cracker.
Oh, look, come here. It's for the neutral, for anybody, for Limerick and for Waterford. This is an amazing opportunity for both counties in a year where we thought there'd be no hurling. I mean, look at us now, and people are giving out over the last week that there's been no GAA and no sports. And, you know, it's just, well, they just take a look at themselves and realise the joy it's bringing to so many people across the country at the moment. We've been treated so many class games. And as you said, this game is going to be unbelievable. I mean, like, who would you want to win it? You'd love to see Waterford to win it, because they've been 1959 is the last time they won it. I mean, Limerick have had their day out 2 years ago, so you feel like maybe, you know, it might be Waterford's turn. But it's going to be absolutely smashing. Limerick and Waterford have never played each other in an All-Ireland final, and it's really nice to see another different team in the mix. You know, that's Waterford in the mix now again for another Ireland final, and it's nice not to see, I know it's great to see the Kilkenny and Tipperary's, but to see a different team, it's such a nice change for everybody. It really is.
Alright, it certainly is. Alright, Valerie, thanks for that. Safe trip home.
Thanks, Rory. Bye.
That's Valerie Wheeler there in Croke Park. Alright, going to hear from John Kiley, the Limerick managers, before we wrap up the show. We'll eventually hear from John Kiley there. Just before we wrap up the show. I was waiting to hear from him following today's fantastic win over Galway today. Their 3-point win, a fantastic result for them. They will face Waterford in the final in 2 weeks' time. And this is John Kiley speaking to the Assemble Media afterwards.
Start, you know, we've still created a few chances, right, but you know, just a few handling errors and bits and pieces, you know, we're just a bit nervy maybe. And once we settled into it then, midway through the first half, we got into a good rhythm and, you know, clawed back that bit of a lead that Galway had. And yeah, it was nip and tucked in for long, long periods of the game. Very, very satisfied with the performance, like, because, you know, when things aren't coming as easily as you might like them to come, sometimes that can be the day that, you know, you back off it and you just accept that it's not happening for you today, maybe, or that you're finding it too difficult today. But the boys just embraced that challenge and embraced the difficulty and tried to figure out the solutions to the problems and just kept fighting and fighting and fighting. And the boys coming off the bench then made a huge impact as well in the last 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's John Colley there speaking after today's game. We're out of time. Our Supermax competition winner is Marie Harty from Ballyhay. Congratulations, you've won a €25 voucher, but thanks to Supermax at supermax.ie. We're back next Saturday from 6 Podcast, and I'm very, very shortly. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday night, folks.
The Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.